Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate that you listen to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and also leave us some feedback. Rate us. Give us a review. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
John Canzano. Raw. Sourced. Fresh. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, built by High Caliber Millwrights. This is the Bald-Faced Truth.
All right, Tiger Woods. He won at Augusta. That was a big deal. Captured not just the sports world, but peripheral golf fans. And I think there are a lot of tentacles to this Tiger Woods story. It's a comeback story. It's a redemption story. He came back and overcame not only physical injury, but he overcame his own past and decisions that he made, choices, bad choices he made in his past, choices that, you know, he had to own publicly. I thought it was really interesting. And I think that people were cheering for Tiger for different reasons. Our next guest is an author. His name's Rick McDaniel. He's written a book called Turn Your Setbacks into Comebacks. I want to talk to him about Tiger. Rick, thanks for making time and being flexible for us.
Yes, I'm happy to be with you.
The book that you wrote, it is essentially the Tiger Woods story. I mean, you're talking about setbacks into comebacks. What made you want to write this book, and what did you see in Tiger's story that really rings true to the book?
Well, the reason I wrote the book, I've written two books, actually. The first one was called Come Back, Overcoming the Setbacks in Your Life, and then the second book, Turn Your Comebacks into Setbacks, because everyone has setbacks, because everyone experiences things in their life, whether they lose a job or they have their marriage fall apart or they have health problems or any number of other things happen. And so people need to know, how do I have a comeback from that? Is it possible? And if so, how? And then are there some stories that you can share with me? And so that's why I've written these books. And, you know, Tiger Woods is why I've written on him in terms of articles, because he exemplifies much of what I've written about in terms of setbacks and overcoming them and having and this is really a second comeback. He had a comeback 6 years ago from his first series of setbacks, and this is now number two.
Yeah, there's a story of perseverance there, and I always say bad things are going to happen, and you look at champion stories, and you say, okay, why did that person overcome and somebody else just disappeared? What was it about Tiger's strategy that you think helped him?
Well, I think that Tiger, first of all, did the thing that every single person, whatever setback you've had in your life, here's what you have to know. You have to make a change. No one's ever had a comeback without changing. You know the classic definition, do the same thing, same way, expect different results. Doesn't work that way. You've got to make changes. And go all the way back to Tiger's first comeback and just look at what he did after, you know, his public infidelity and divorce of his wife and all this disastrous stuff. So here's what he does. Number one, he changes his coach. Then he changes his caddy. Then he changes where he lives. Makes all these changes in his life. And the result is he ends up winning five tournaments and being the PGA Tour Player of the Year. Then he goes into the second comeback challenge, which is his health. And what did he do then? Well, he tried different treatments. None of them worked. And so finally, he went for a more radical approach, spinal fusion surgery. And that change worked. And look what happened on Sunday.
We're talking to Rick McDaniel. He's written a book. It's called Turn Your Setbacks into Comebacks. We're talking about Tiger Woods as well. You talk about survival mode, and then you talk about finding motivation in the book. How do those two things work hand in hand when you see a comeback, like Tiger especially?
Yeah, okay, because survival mode is where people go. It's just, you know, when you first have a setback, you're just trying to survive. You're just trying to make it. You're just trying to keep your head above water. And Tiger had that too. I mean, there was a time there when his health was so bad that he was just miserable. And he, as you know, as was revealed later, was on painkillers, ended up getting hooked on them, was sitting around playing video games because he can't do anything else. But you've got to get out of survival mode. You've got to exit survival mode. And he did. He went to rehab. He got the spine effusion surgery. He said, I can't stay this way. And he got out of it. And when you get out of survival mode, you begin to look at life differently. And then you look for motivation. What is it that can motivate you to move you into a comeback? And I don't think Tiger's a guy that's lacked for motivation. But listen, you go through as many setbacks as this guy went through, and you know you're going to have some challenges. But I think he looked around the golfing world. He saw all these younger guys thinking they were taking over, and I think that motivated him.
I saw him with his kids after the tournament, and it struck me that maybe part of his motivation years ago, I mean, he was just a trained killer. I think he was an assassin. And I think he was very difficult to be around. I think that's why so many people enjoyed kind of the fall of Tiger, because he had made golf writers miserable and the media miserable around him because he was difficult. But I saw his kids, and I saw him interact with his kids, and he took his hat off, and you see his receding hairline. And I saw a father in his kids. I wondered if his motivation had shifted from, I'm going to kill all these other golfers, I'm just going to obliterate them on the course, to, hey, I want my kids to see me win a major.
Absolutely. That's absolutely what happened. He wanted his children. You know, he's got a 10-year-old son, wasn't even born the last time he won a major, and his daughter was just a little baby, so they never seen it. He wanted them to see, not that their dad was the guy that had a video game, video game named after him, not that their dad had, you know, videos on YouTube that they could watch, but they could actually be there and see their dad hoist a trophy, hear the crowd cheer for him. I think it was a huge motivation for him to, and you know, many times our family and the people we love are the greatest motivators that we can have, to just say, you know, I'm going to do this for my kids. I'm going to do this for my spouse. I'm going to do this for the people that really care about me, my brothers, my sisters, my parents. And so I absolutely think that was the case. And I do think there's been a major shift in I do think he was an assassin. I think that's a good word. And he was difficult. And now people say that he's friendlier. He's more fan friendly. He's more press friendly. I think he's even more friendly with his competitors. I don't think he's as standoffish, although the competitor in him still wants to win. And I think it's that competitive drive, again, that motivated him to not only win back in September. And that was the beginning. And that's when I wrote that article. I said, I predicted it. I said, yep, this guy's going to win a major. He's going to win a major. It's not because I'm some kind of, you know, golf genius. If you ever saw me play golf, you know that's not the case. It's because I know the principles of comebacks, and it's like a checklist. He was knocking them off one by one, and the result was going to be eventually a major, and it only took the very first major of the year.
We're talking to Rick McDaniel. He is a comeback author. His book is called Turn Your Setbacks into Comebacks. For people who are listening, because you know, bad things are going to happen to people. They're going to lose jobs. There's going to be health problems. There's tragedy that happens in life. What are those principles? Can you knock those out in a moment or two of just saying, look, something bad happens to you. There's survival mode that you mentioned, finding motivation that you mentioned. What comes after that?
It's a big one. Lose setback mentality. Setback mentality enters into people, and then all they keep doing is playing it over in their mind. Woulda, coulda, shoulda. You know, this isn't fair. I'm being picked on. And if you just stay in setback mentality, you've got to get out of it. I mean, you've just got to get out of setback mentality. So that has to happen. Another really vital step is restoring your confidence, like Tiger did. He really restored taking the little steps that cause you to believe, you know, I can get healthier. I can succeed in love. I can be successful in my career. And just building your confidence step by step and resurrecting your dreams. Your dreams just go away when you have a setback. It's just, they're like a million miles away. And part of the comeback is when you're able to say, I still have these dreams. I'm not going to give up on my dreams. Those are some of the principles, obviously many more that I talk about in my book.
When you see people or hear from people who've been through tough stuff, I mean, common mistakes. You mentioned falling into that trap, that mentality, that defeatist mentality. Isn't that just rooted in confidence, though? I mean, like, you know, and I think even Tiger at this point, he's not done, is he? Isn't there more for him here?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, there's more. In fact, I was talking with someone earlier, and I really think that he's on the way. Again, his first comeback, he won five tournaments, but he didn't win a major. Now he's won a major. I'd say watch out. His experience that he has, that is so valuable, especially at these courses that are played at majors, the way they loop him around. He's played at many of them. And then just his belief in his health, and then now that he's seen what the response he's gotten from his kids and his family and those that love him and care about him, I mean, it's going to grow. I don't think we're done. I don't think we're done with that. But I do think that confidence is always huge in anything revolving around a comeback. At some point, you know, your confidence takes a hit, and you've got to be able to believe again in yourself. Because here's the thing about comebacks. Comebacks always come with new opportunities, and that window of opportunity opens, and a confident person can step forward. And when you step forward, that new opportunity usually ends up being something positive, which leads to more opportunities, and little by little, and sometimes big steps, and you're on your way to a great comeback.
All right, before I cut you loose, the guy that I'm thinking about now is Francesco Molinari. I mean, he led this tournament after 10 holes by 2 strokes, and he imploded down the stretch. The roar of the gallery, the pressure of playing with Tiger, he made mistakes that were uncharacteristic. What advice would you have for Molinari today?
Here's the first thing I'd say is you went head-to-head with Tiger in the British Open last year, and you beat him. Don't forget that.
Yeah.
Your confidence. Second thing, it was like almost playing in the home team's arena. I mean, everybody was rooting against Molinari and for Tiger. That's not always going to be the case. He had the home cooking like nothing else there in the Masters. So understand you were in a hostile environment, and remember, you beat him before. This is a blip. This is not who you are, and you can come back from it.
Rick McDaniel, I appreciate your time. Thank you. Great book. Turn your setbacks to comebacks. Where can people find the book?
Well, I guess the easiest way is Amazon. You know, Amazon.com, bing, bang, boom, and there it is. That'd be probably. I do have a website, rickmcdaniel.com, if you want an autograph copy type of thing. But either way, you can get it.
All right. Thanks for your time, Rick McDaniel. There he is. Turn your setbacks into comebacks. See, that's why you come to the show. You'll thank me one day when you go, you know, some bad stuff happened. How do I spin this into something positive? That's part of why we're here. We're here for you. All right, leave it here. Our 2 at 2, the two biggest things in sports are coming up, and they're not going to be what you expect. I'm not going low and lazy with this next segment. I have fun on this show. I don't know if you have fun. Maybe I'm like that guy. You ever drive around and you see the guy on the street corner? He's got the sign guy. He's dancing. Maybe he's got a Walkman back in the day on, or maybe he has like AirPods on today. He's holding that giant arrow sign. He's advertising like a mattress store or a grand opening, and he's dancing. He's in his own little world. He always looks so happy to me. I'm like, that guy, he's so happy. I couldn't do that, but maybe that's me. Maybe I'm doing that on this radio show.
I saw that guy walking across the crosswalk just yesterday with the sign in his hand. Yeah. All of a sudden, he stops in the middle of the crosswalk and the cars. Yeah, he starts dancing in front of the cars.
Gyrating.
It was hilarious. I was in my car and going the other direction, or, you know, it was a four-way stoplight. It was the funniest thing I ever saw. He just started dancing. He was watching the crosswalk number go down,
yeah,
and he danced till about 5 seconds left, and then he kind of trotted off. It was fantastic.
I love anybody who has that much joy in their day. All right. I also know that all the time we've done this segment on the show where I say, tell me about the worst job you ever had, and nobody calls in ever and says, I was the sign guy standing on the side of the street. For two reasons, I think this doesn't happen. One,
I don't know if anybody publicly would want to acknowledge being that sign guy outside of when you are the sign guy. And two, I think the sign guy is probably a happy person. Who would choose that unless you enjoyed standing on the corner and dancing and getting noticed? And by the way, they're always in good shape.
Yeah.
Sign guy's in great shape. Or girl.
Yeah, every time. And I agree with you. I think they're happy. They got to be happy. You've got to be happy. You've got to be happy doing that.
Because we've done the thing, and I go, all right, who's got the worst job ever, right? And the phone lines are just blasted. Like, it doesn't even ring. Like, you know, it's just jammed. And it's exterminator talking about having to go into the house and deal with raccoons. It's the guy in charge of cleaning out the porta potties. It's everybody who's ever had a manual labor job or held a jackhammer. It's delivery people. I just talked to a guy the other day. We took the kids to, by the way, this is a funny story. This is yesterday, the other day. We took the kids to there was kind of a community Easter festival going on at a local high school gym. And we took the kids in to go to this thing. And it's nice, but it's also kind of simple. The kids buy tickets. We buy tickets, and then the kids get to play games. And it's little things like they have a fishing pole, and they throw it over the thing, and somebody on the other side is clipping on a prize, and then they reel it in. You know, it's kind of very simple.
Yeah.
But part of the festival was they had a bunny rabbit or a person in a rabbit costume, and they would take a picture of your kids with the rabbit, and they were charging $5. So I, being a good dad, said, all right, I'm going to buy the picture for $5 because I ain't at the end of this thing. I don't want the kids walking away going, I didn't get to meet the Easter Bunny. And so I bought the picture. They give you a ticket. And then at the end of the thing, we went around. They played all the games. We go up to the area where the rabbit is. And and we're in line. This lady walks up with her kid. She had not bought a ticket. She walked up with her kid and she said to her, and by the way, it was Peter Rabbit. They didn't say it was the Easter Bunny. They said it was Peter Rabbit.
Okay.
Maybe they were afraid they would get sued by the Easter Bunny. But the lady kind of walked up to the stage with her kid and said, go ahead, go up and high five the Easter Bunny. And the security person who was in charge of running the event stopped them and said, hey, we're charging $5 for that. And so the lady said, hey, my kid just wants to meet the Easter Bunny. And then they said, yeah, for $5, he can meet the Easter Bunny. And I just thought that was so funny. And then the guy who was in charge of being that security person turned to me and said, love the show. And I said, well, what do you do? He said, I listen every day. And I said, what do you do? He's probably listening right now. He said, I'm a truck driver. So he's just volunteering at the event. All right. Somebody has to be in charge. I kind of agree with the premise. Like,
yeah, I wouldn't like that job, though, telling a kid that you don't get to see.
Guess what? You can meet Peter Rabbit for $5, kid.
Oh, man.
Somebody's got to do it. So he said, I love the show. I'm a truck driver. And I said, you know, so when we do that stuff, that guy's got a hard job as it is. And on his weekends, he's just killing dreams. He's just telling kids. I forgot. It's one of those moments where I was laughing so hard internally, but I couldn't like openly laugh because I just thought that scene was so funny.
You make that lady even more mad than she already was.
It reminded me of Ralphie in Christmas Story when he wanted the Red Ryder.
Yep.
You know, he wanted the rifle, and he got all the way up, waited all that time to get to the top with Santa, and Santa told him, you'll shoot your eye out, kid. And at the end of it, I just thought, you know, from this movie.
I triple dog dare you.
Yes, that movie. But at the end of it, I thought, that was so funny. And then it was one of those moments where Anna's like, what's so funny? Because I was kind of like, I was trying to withhold my laugh, and I said, I'll tell you later. And then I forgot to tell her. So I hope she's listening to the show. She can hear it now. But basically, the mom was so annoyed. She was so upset.
I bet.
She was like, my kid's just trying to meet the Easter Bunny. And the guy said, for $5, you can do it.
Okay. Do you think This is a terrible thing to ask. Yeah. But do you think that the parent walked up and said, there's no way they're going to say no to my kid?
Yeah. I think cute kid. By the way, she had a cute kid and she marched that kid right up there. Here's the thing that we ran into. So we got the 2-year-old and the 4-year-old. The 4-year-old didn't want to be in the picture. She's afraid of the bunny. And the 2-year-old went right up there because she's a daredevil. And she went right up there and turned around and posed. And the 4-year-old, she wanted none of it. So, you know, maybe that lady could have put her kid in our picture and got to meet the Easter bunny. So there's how that goes. But I'm just here to, you know, I'm here to say, like, there are people out there that have genuinely have their joy in their day. I love doing this show. I love talking to people. I love being on the air. I love people who are part of the show and call in all the time. Our listeners who are regular callers, I love you. I also like new callers. I like to hear from some new voices. So I want to open this up in the next half hour of this radio show as we talk about Tiger Woods and we talk about some other things. I want to open up the phone lines. I want you to weigh in, like, on your reaction to what you saw in the Masters in Tiger Woods. And as comeback stories go, are we making too much of this? Because we have the propensity in sports media to go hyperbolic, right? We love the hyperbole. We like to declare something as the greatest ever. And I'm hearing a lot of people saying, greatest comeback story of all time. What made it a great comeback in your eyes? Where does it rank as a comeback story? Is there another comeback story out there that's waiting to happen? Like, what's the next comeback story in sports? 503-417-7575. I'll take your phone calls on that front. Also, I'm going to jam in the 2 at 2 right now along those lines. Tiger Woods wins at Augusta. The 2 at 2.
The 2 at 2.
Well, you heard it there. Tiger won. Augusta National. It seemed big moments. Hogan, Nicklaus, Tiger 20 years ago. Tiger Woods wins his 5th major, hugs his son afterwards, and there was this iconic kind of father-son thing happening that many remember Earl Woods having with Tiger once upon a time, a young Tiger Woods. That was a different Tiger than this guy. My favorite moment of the Masters was when Tiger Woods took his hat off. On 18. He celebrated, walked around the green, soaking it in, took his hat off, and you saw his receding hairline. In that moment, I realized how far he's come. He's not a young man anymore. Tiger Woods at Augusta, overcoming not just injury, but his own personal decisions. I think it made it sweeter. Second in our 2 at 2 is the NBA playoffs. We've now seen one round of games from all of the teams in the playoffs, and we're going to enter the second round of games tonight. I think it's been really interesting to see how these teams showed up. Some of them didn't show up to play. 76ers did not show up to play. Utah did not show up to play. The Bucks showed up to play. The Blazers showed up to play, at least for a quarter, and then held on. I'm interested in these series as they take shape. What's going to happen in Game 2 of the Blazers-Thunder series? What's going to happen in Game 2 of the 76ers series with Brooklyn? I expect the Sixers to bounce back. I expect the Thunder might too. But that's what makes a series. You got to get to 4 to win them. That's our 2 at 2. Take your phone calls now on the Tiger Woods front. What's the next comeback story in sports? Who is it that you're looking at going, all right, they could be the next Tiger? And what in your mind, because I think it's different from everybody, what in your mind made this Tiger Woods story so great? What made it a comeback? What gave you chills? What set you, what ignited that in your mind? 503-417-7575. Paul's in Lake Oswego is going to start us off. Paul, what's up?
Mr. Gonzalo, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I was just thinking, this is nowhere comparable to what happened yesterday. But Brandon Roy, Game 5, Dallas Mavericks.
Yeah.
He had 2 knees that were dead. And I was at the arena. He shouldn't be walking. They're down 20 points in the fourth quarter. And he willed them back to win. And I was like, that was the last time I felt that emotion of, wow, we're witnessing greatness, a medical miracle, with a victory at the end. By no means is it the same as Tiger, but I'm just trying to rack my brain when I felt that same type of, we're witnessing an improbable human event here.
Yeah, Brandon Roy had 24. He had 18 of his 24 in that fourth quarter against the Mavericks. And, you know, the Blazers were down by as much as 23 with a minute to go in the third. It was done. They had been bad. And by no fault of his own, Brandon Roy has, you know, he was washed up at that point. He was injured. And Nate McMillan finally just said, what the hell? This can't hurt. Roy came in. He makes 8 of 10 field goals. He has 4 assists. He accounted for 12 of the 15 buckets that the Blazers made in that last quarter. And it was one of those moments where the broadcast call and Brian Wheeler's, you know, broadcast call of that game was, it'd give you chills. As you talk about, you know, here was a team in 2011 that needed a shot in the arm and got one. And by the way, Brandon Roy checking into the wanted the ball more, and it was very was excited about where he was. But here was Brandon Roy after he came into the game.
There was a point in the first half I was thinking, man, you better not cry. Like, I mean, seriously, I'm thinking like this. There's a moment where I felt really sorry for myself. But then you can't be sorry for yourself. I'm a grown man. There's a moment where I felt sorry for myself, and especially when I think I can still help. You know?
You remember that? And then Brandon Roy came off the bench and was just lights out. I'll play some of that Brandon Roy with Brian Wheeler on the call coming up. I want more of your phone calls on the next. What's the next comeback story? 503-417-7575.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.